It's October 21st, 2009.
And this is Idle Thumbs 48. And I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Nick Brecken.
No, you're Jake Rodkin. Now you're even falling for that.
God.
I thought it was just the real.
Here we go again.
It's October 21st, 2009.
And this is Idle Thumbs 48. And I'm Chris Remo.
And I'm Nick Brecken.
And I'm Jake Rodkin.
And today we're joined again by Steve Hotskip Skinner, our favorite
dude. Hey, everybody.
Hey,
I'm
Steve.
On the cast.
Hey, Steve.
Hey.
Thanks for coming by.
You know what? It's my pleasure, Chris.
Is it really?
Yeah. Yeah. I love all of your fans and mine and talking to them.
What is what?
Well,
you
good.
You have loved each of Chris's fans.
Passionately.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
You don't actually have that many. You might
well,
not
know. Well, you know. How's that Bioshock 2 coming?
It hasn't given me much time to, you know, passionately love your fans.
Right.
But,
enough?
Yeah.
Okay.
The game is becoming a game.
Good.
It's real. It's a game.
Are you in what you would describe as the home stretch?
Yes. I think that's accurate.
Cool.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
You sounded like a robot just now. Like, yes, I think that's accurate.
The game is entering close to certification.
You guys can do that robot voice way better than I can.
Well, maybe you shouldn't be the one making Bioshock 2 then.
What does that mean?
So, what games you guys been playing?
Video games.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, did you guys want to talk about the Modern Warfare 2 thing? People keep asking me what I think about it.
I heard that it's not going to have a dedicated
server. Man, I was outraged.
Oh, for the PC? PC gaming? That sucks.
No dedicated servers.
I like how we're just like, fuck that.
Yeah.
I don't play enough multiplayer PC games anymore because I'm stupid, so I don't really know the up or downside of that. It'll probably make the PC multiplayer scene suck more.
Well, I'm kind of bummed about it personally.
Yeah, I thought the dedicated... Why would
their
not
their
be
reasoning
more?
was to consolidate the community. I guess they felt that there were too many mods running on dedicated servers and things like of that nature.
Yeah, I mean, they've said basically they think matchmaking is a better route it's, you know, it is, and it is a more accessible situation. I mean, there certainly have been times in my life when I've looked at a list of servers for a PC game and just sort of thought, I guess I'll just pick one of these, and I don't really know. But I guess from my perspective, the way I play games now, I don't do a lot of random play. I don't really like playing with random dudes who are going to be horrible and assholes. The way I like to play most is to find the servers set up by either a site that I like Shaq News. You know, Shaq always has multiplayer servers going for different games, or other forums, things like that. I like that feel. Yeah. I like the community feel dedicated.
Yeah, I mean, I will normally, if I'm playing a game like an FPS on multiplayer, I'll find a server that is a dedicated server that actually has cool people on it, and I'll
just go back there.
Yeah,
and it seems like if that's not even an option, I don't know why that wouldn't be a secondary option or something.
But. No, the way Bowling said is they're doing sort of a party based system on the PC through InfinityWard.net or IWNet or whatever it's called, where you know you can form a party, and then if you're to counter the clan frustrations, he said, oh well, you know, you can just get the other clan all in a party, and then you can challenge each other. The problem I have with that is that works fine if you're scheduling a thing, but if you just like the idea of not necessarily adding a million people to your friends list, who people you don't even necessarily know,
with this group that you know is going to be some segment of that group is always going to be there.
In the Shaq News server situation, it adds more hassle for sure. Because you've got to group up two groups and then challenge each other, right?
Yeah, exactly. As opposed to just jumping into a server that is going to be running all the time.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of bummed about that. I also think it's an issue in that it is another attempt to sort of say, okay, this is what we got out of the PC experience. This is why it's maybe a little too complicated or unwieldy for some people. Let's do the thing we do on the console version, and then that way it'll be easier. Which makes sense, sort of. I mean, there are some things about the console experience that are just kind of better and easier and more convenient. But at the end of the day, if someone really wants that badly, they probably, by this point, are already playing the console version. I think once you get to the point where you're not only adding things to try to capitalize on what consoles do well, but actually removing things that are part of the identity of how the PC experience works, then I think at that point, you're taking away a lot more value than you're adding.
Yeah. Did they offer any reasoning as to why there wasn't sort of like, you know, a secondary option of using dedicated, like exposing it basically, if you know what it is and want to see
I think
stuff?
Probably, quite honestly, they want to have it be as closed a system as possible so that they can have, you know, it makes it easier to sell DLC. Well, yeah, it makes it easier to ensure that people are going through all your stat tracking and everything. I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah, like, I mean, mods are sort of, were traditionally seen in PC multiplayer as a way to extend the life of a product, but if you can sell them that content and it's first party developed instead, and that's sort of the tinfoil hatty version, but it's probably kind of true.
Yeah.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. It could be, at least. I don't know.
I'm curious, too, how mod tools are going to work, because Infinity Ward, actually, I haven't checked in the last couple weeks, but I know that for a while, they, on their website, they actually offered their Call of Duty 4 mapping tools as explicitly as a way to say, if you want to apply to be a level designer here, make stuff with the Call of Duty 4 mod tools.
Well, is there going
to
be no modding support at all, or is it just...
I don't know. They seem to be really downplaying it.
Yeah, I saw... The one thing that I read, which I think was on some really weird site, and, you know, this is all probably all bullshit, but that there wouldn't be, you know, the end result was that there wouldn't be, but I that's, you know, rumor mill crap. I have no idea.
Did you read Bowling's actual response
today? No, I didn't. I wasn't really keeping up with all this, but it's weird because I talked to him about this at the event we were at like a month ago, you know, and he said, no, I know the PC is going to be the same as it was Call of Duty 4.
In fact, I've seen your quote.
Yeah, I know. Actually, yeah, it was linked
in
a lot of different...
Your interview has become canon here.
Like, why are they reversed it? Yeah. Well, it is weird, though. I don't know why.
You know, Bowling lied.
Well,
PC gamers died. I don't know. I have seen some, like, crazy... You know, I definitely think this is, quite frankly, sort of bullshit, and I'm sort of irritated by it, especially because I plan to buy this version of the game, but then, oh my god, some of the people, it's goddamn hysterical. If you go to some of these hardcore clan forums, they have all the little bumper sticker, like, signature things.
Yes.
What? There's one that I can't figure out. It's hilarious to me. It's got a little Obama O sunrise icon, and then it says, I'll keep my dedicated servers, you keep the change.
Oh, man.
That is amazing.
Wow.
I can't figure out. Does that guy, is I mean, I guess there was probably like a guns bumper sticker or something that basically said that.
Yeah.
But it looks also like it's got the Obama colors and everything. I can't figure out if the guy is also making a secondary political point or...
Probably.
If he just thought, like, it's baffling to me.
It's probably just overlap between not liking Obama and wanting dedicated servers.
Yeah. That's a key demographic.
But not realizing that those two things actually weren't related at all.
Yeah.
When making this clever bumper sticker icon dealy bopper. Skeely-doot, right?
Yeah. I was going to say that, I mean, I'm probably not going to play a lot of this game, because I, as you guys know,
really video games,
Jake, really?
I have been playing a lot of TF2, both at work and at home lately.
Yeah, I know.
And,
I saw that.
One thing
I always see you like 7 o'clock on days we record the podcast. I'm like, well, all the guys should be getting here soon, and then the little thing will pop up, and it's like, Jake is playing Team Fortress 2. That happened tonight again, which was hilarious.
I started playing at 6:30.
I didn't message you this time, though.
What are you doing? But one thing that the TF2 does, and I think it's partly just because of the personality of that game, is the styles of mods that are made for TF2 are really weird callbacks to my memories of playing Quake 1 and Quake 2 in LANs, where it's like Valve has support for just swapping out geo and sounds, which is the most annoying shit in the world, but at the same time you end up on dedicated servers that are entirely reminiscent of the bullshit. Like, everyone's on roller skates and shooting fireballs and stuff, where like... I was playing on a server, where all the proxy mines were Mario Bob-ombs, and the small, medium, and large health were replaced with heart, piece of heart, and heart container.
Nice.
And it kept playing music from Pee-wee's Big Adventure during setup. And everyone was allowed to run around and just blow each other up during the setup phase, because they opened all the gates. And like at the end of rounds, it was set up so that if you were killed on the losing team, you would just respawn anyway. So that just the base just turned into just a blood shower while just huge music was playing. And like, I don't know, it's what the
I'm
fuck
glad
is going
that
on?
Still exists.
Yeah, that's yeah, awesome.
When most like, mods like, try to be like 5 year. Crazy
yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, no, there like are some the really prop crazy hunt ones. Mod, the hide and seek invisible objects thing, which you know.
Oh right,
where
yeah.
You, it's that other TF2 mod where you can hide as.
I haven't seen this.
Oh, you. It's one team is pyros and one team is game objects, and then the map
pyros
is all,
versus game objects,
and then the other map
pyros versus
yeah, the,
game
the map,
objects.
The maps are all just filled with way more just bullshit single objects than usual, and then you have to just you are like a little green frog, and you have to go hide amongst a pile of garbage. And then pyros go.
Is one of them the gnome that pops up in like every valve achievement?
I don't
it
know.
Seems. It seems like it's so. Everything. Like there's like the red chair from the base,
oh, yeah,
and just
you,
like
you
an oil
be,
barrel.
A capture point is one of the things that someone has to hide as. So you have yeah. to then just crouch down onto the capture point.
Yeah.
But just.
Yeah, that kind
of
hilarious
sort of
shit. Yeah.
Yeah, but
it's
that's
awesome.
That I just haven't been playing enough PC first person shooters that are multiplayer focused, but it's weird. Anyway, it made me remember the power of dedicated servers is super awesome. And then when I read that news, I cared a lot more than I probably would have if I hadn't been playing TF2.
Yeah, I mean, I like when the weird sort of frontier days of PC multiplayer still shine through.
Yep.
You know, that's not the experience most of the time these days, but when you get those like glimpses of 1997, it's
awesome.
What
I don't like about dedicated servers is when you end up with like dust only or Instagib or excessive, where it's like, but the ones where it's just, we're taking the main mechanic and then just doing a wacky thing to it that may or whatever, you know.
You can get that in matchmaking too, though. In some cases, matchmaking exacerbates that problem because it requires there be a big enough pool of people to draw from within the specific settings you ask for. So, I mean, like I remember having this in Halo 2 all the time. You know, the only I shouldn't say the only, but the main thing I enjoy in Halo 2 in a Halo any multiplayer is the crazy stuff, like Crazy King, Skull, all that shit, and some of the you know people basically all
Slayer.
They ever want to do is Slayer on Blood Gulch. Only.
Well, I run into this problem playing Left 4 Dead occasionally where you'll get match made into a dedicated server that has like really obnoxious stat tracking things that are just popping up on the screen.
I've just
random stuff. Yeah. And it's just like, I'm in the game. I took all this time to get a group together. And now I've got to exit to get rid of this stupid server. Like, that's obnoxious.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's going to be a problem everywhere.
Yeah.
Unless you don't support mods, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
or not server side mods.
Server settings. I think that. Honestly, what they should really do, it's nice that they are doing their own thing. I don't mind that they've got a nice, robust multiplayer system. There's nothing wrong with that at all. It can be cool, but it would be nice to be able to just expose a server browser for the people who know that they might be playing this game for a couple of years, and they probably want to do it with people they like and know in a place that is cool. Because that really is, to me, one of the biggest strengths of PC multiplayer, and I think it'd be a big shame if Activision started kind of setting the line for how things work, because I think they're capable of it. I mean,
I wonder if a lot of people that really feel strongly about that will just stick with COD 4 after Modern Warfare 2 comes out.
It seems like the number of pre-orders canceled has actually been like a pretty noticeable dent. I mean, I don't know how one would go around about getting hard numbers on that, and there probably is no way to, but it seems like people are at least for now.
Are you going by petition signatures or?
No. I'm going by people who said they called GameSpot and were told other like, oh man, again, this is like the sixth cancellation we've had today or whatever.
Oh really?
I don't know. Bowling said he, you know, passed the stuff along, but that was before he made his response on his blog, so who knows? I don't know. I mean, considering they're raising the price of the game $10 more than what you'd usually pay on the PC.
A $60 PC game?
Yeah.
Hilarious.
I mean, it's, you know, it's not the end of the world, but it's
well, the world is
doing
ending.
Both of these at the same time is, it does.
Right. Yeah. Right.
It is a little
we'll
more
just
frustrating.
Remove functionality and replace that with $10. Wait, what?
For us.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you thought I, I mean, you give us more. Sorry. Let's be clear here. Yeah. Anyway, that, you know, whatever. A lot of people who don't play PC games are listening to this and are bored off their goddamn asses.
Yep.
Sorry, guys.
And sorry
we care about
ass.
Boring things.
Yeah. Like PC multiplayer gaming.
Yeah.
Ugh. Snoresville.
PC.
Ugh. Computer.
Speaking of the PS3.
I've been playing some Demon's Souls.
Oh, the,
this is the
oh,
other
yeah,
thing
the
that
PlayStation
people
3
were pestering
computer
me about.
Entertainment system?
Yeah, the PlayStation 3 computer entertainment system.
Oh, yeah. So I did bust out my PlayStation 3 computer entertainment system to play a video game.
Oh.
Were you entertained?
Oh, you can play video games on that computer.
Yeah.
Entertainment system.
Okay, we've talked about this before, I think, about how it's a computer game. I think it's treading old ground here.
Yeah, I think we got to move on. So I have been playing a video game, Demon's Souls. This is
this is just a PC gaming podcast, isn't it?
Yeah.
Crazy.
So Demon's Souls.
Yeah. It's interesting. This is one of those games that has completely lit up the whole
weird
internet gaming sort of Illuminati not Illuminati, sort of intelligentsia.
Nerds.
Scott Miller's game Illuminati.
It's a specific kind of nerd. You know what I mean? It's the kind who likes to
write
blog posts about game design and things like that. It's
Have you been recently raped in a game with sword skeletons and like flying giant manta rays that shoot magic at you? If not, you know.
Demon's Souls.
Demon's Souls. This game.
Right here.
I mean, it's sort of like the Japanese Far Cry 2 almost in that respect to me.
Oh, God.
I mean, it is.
Oh, no.
It's like, I mean, not in the way it plays. I don't mean mechanically. I just mean in terms of that sense of like the way people are talking about it and the type of people are talking about it.
Yeah.
It's sort of a few degrees off from that where it's like, look, I know this seems really frustrating and I know it's really off-putting, but you got to stick with it because then it'll make your soul explode in joy.
Right,
or a demon.
You'll find a wobbly wall in a cavern and then slice your sword at it and it disappears and then there's a huge skeleton behind it killing you.
Is that why? Is that the reason, Jake? Jake saw a
Jake
thing.
Jake may have
so
only
can,
seen about
that's, now he
that's
can pretend
about 30 seconds of gameplay.
That's the 5 seconds that I saw.
That's Jake's whole impression of this game.
No, I also saw you kill guys and get killed.
Yeah.
There's other parts to this game, though, right?
There are many other parts to this game. Yeah.
Are there really more parts than killing guys and getting killed?
Yeah.
Well, no, but there's more parts than a door opening.
Okay.
That was awesome, though.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting a skeleton to be behind it. The third time I was expecting.
You found, like, a super secret, and it was your death. Is this what's being described?
Many deaths were described.
No, you're talking about the real game, and not
just
that
what's cool about this video game?
Well, I will say that, again, to bring up Far Cry 2 again.
You don't have to.
I know I don't have to, but I want to tell people that, because I remember when we were talking about Far Cry 2, that was a game that I liked right from the beginning.
Right.
I know a lot of other people were very frustrated by it, and I eventually wrote an article about why people should stick with that frustration until they ended up sort of getting the game to click with them. And the reason I bring it up is because while I was sort of projecting in that case there, like sort of extrapolating, in Demon's Souls, I actually went through that myself.
Right.
Where the first time I played this game,
You stepped through the looking glass.
The first time I played it, it was almost unbearable after a few hours. It was just...
You couldn't take it. You couldn't handle it.
No.
Because it was, as all of its ads describe, brutally punishing and horrible. That's like how they're selling the game. It's like, do you like to fail constantly? Give us $60.
Pretty much.
Yeah. But it's supposedly the kind of difficulty you actually learn from and feel good about overcoming.
In most cases it is. And sometimes I think not to its detriment, but generally, you also have to kind of stick through, or I guess not stick through, but start to understand what's interesting about the tone and the atmosphere. I mean, it's a pretty dismal game a lot of the time. It's proportioned very realistically. It's very dull visually most of the time. I mean, especially the whole first world is very gray. It's very repetitive. You're fighting pretty much the same guys again and again most of the time. And the first night I played it, I probably played it for 3 or 4 hours the first night. And honestly, by the time I was done, I was just like, I don't understand why anyone would play this. Like, I'm dying all the time. I'm not really getting anywhere. I don't really know what I'm doing. But the game's not really indicating why I should keep playing, right? I mean, the game was giving me no hint about what I would like about it later.
Yeah.
And it was basically just, honestly, talking to people. Like, one of my coworkers at work was playing it.
Yeah.
I talked to him about it. He talked about his experiences and why he liked it. I kind of read some more stuff on the internet, and it really is a case where you kind of just have to start understanding what the game's about. It's a third person dungeon crawler. It's sort of like if Diablo was more direct control in between regular and hardcore mode.
Yeah.
Because every time you die, you've got to start the level over again, all the way from the beginning. And unless you can get back to your body, you'd lose all the souls you collected along the way, which are the currency you use to do almost everything. Buy things, upgrade weapons, upgrade your stats. And as a result of that, it can be very frustrating if you find yourself losing a lot of progress you've made.
Yeah.
Especially when you've got to fight through all those guys all over again just to get back to where you were, let alone actually get any further.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, basically, that's when I stopped playing any game that I ever stop playing is you just lost 20 minutes of progress, and guess what? You have to do it all over again.
Far Cry 2 is actually the king of that.
It is.
Sometimes.
If you don't, like, if you're not playing on PC, you're screwed a lot.
Even if you are on PC
and you don't quick save, like, wait a second, I have to do the last half hour over?
Yep.
This sucks. Like, basically, no game of this type, you know, post kind of GTA 3 hospitals really has much of an excuse for you to lose meaningful progress ever, and it's super obnoxious, and it feels like outdated when you run into a game where it's like, game over screen. What the fuck is a game over screen? Oh, I have to go back and do shit over. Like, so do they make that somehow not horrible in Demon's Souls?
What they do is they make the game experience overall punishing enough that you get to the point where you feel you need to raise yourself up to the level that you can get through an entire level in one life. I mean, it's just because of the way the game works, to actually complete a level, you've got to get through the entire level and beat the boss without dying.
So like,
this sounds like the argument that I was making in Idle Thumbs episode 1 about Mega Man 9.
Yeah, it's exactly.
And you were slightly denying it at the time.
Yeah, well,
Demon's Souls has finally broken you down.
Not really.
It's the kind of
thing
where
you're not going to get invisible platforms that you have to memorize. There are a couple moments. One of the things people say about this game always, people who really love Demon's Souls, one of the things I've read is, you know, the thing that makes it okay that it's so punishing is that when you die, it's your fault. It's because you did something wrong, or you know, didn't parry, or whatever. And that's true, like, a huge majority of the time. And it does make it better. I mean, it does make you feel like, all right, I should just be better at this. I need to be better at fighting these guys, and then I'll be able to get past it, et cetera. But there are a few parts where, you know, you'll go around a corner, and then right around the corner, there's a little spark of light that gives you about half a second, and then it explodes, and if you're close enough, it'll just kill you outright. Things like that. There's a couple of those that I've encountered, and they're amazingly aggravating because they seem totally out of character with the way the game deals with threatening situations most of the time.
Yeah. When I was reading about people's impressions of this game, the thing in my gaming experience that it sounded the most like was playing God Hand.
Yes.
Which, mostly because when other people were like, it's really fucking hard, but every time you die, you feel like it was your fault, and you know how you need to get better at it. And that was how I felt with God Hand. It was whenever I died, I was like, oh, right, I need to parry more quickly when he does that move, and it always felt totally fair, just really demanding.
Yeah.
And I powered all the way through that game because it always felt achievable, you know? Because it never just overwhelmed you with bullshit. Like, I remember one or two specific parts of God Hand, like you're describing, where it was like, that guy just has moves I can't do anything about. This is shit. And it was obnoxious because it felt like everything else was structured really, really strongly, you know, towards being, you can overcome these obstacles if you just play well enough. Did in playing it, does it remind you very much of, because you played God Hand, you played it for a while.
I was going to actually make that exact comparison myself. And even beyond that, I was going to compare it to generally designed by Shinji Mikami, who did God Hand and Resident Evil 4.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is because a lot of people have compared Demon's Souls to Western developed games, which is, I can understand why. I mean, it's sort of similar to Diablo. It's obviously based on the roguelike formula, which was originally born in the West, although the Japanese seem to like it a lot more than Westerners do these days.
Yeah.
And but the thing I find really interesting about it is that, like a Mikami game, like Resident Evil 4 or God Hand, it does a really interesting thing from a design standpoint of when to use archaic design. You don't get this as much in Western games for whatever reason. I guess it's just a cultural difference. But a lot of Japanese games frequently seem, even these days, seem kind of stuck in the past mechanically. But sometimes you get designers who I feel like are doing that much more consciously than others. They're not doing it because they just haven't caught up or something. They're doing it because they understand what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they're making very specific choices about when not to sort of modernize their game.
Yeah.
And I personally feel Mikami's a master of that in those two games in particular. And Demon's Souls is very evocative of that to me. The game is really, really hardcore about a lot of things. It doesn't let you pause, which I thought I was going to hate before I played the game.
That's kind of
crazy.
But
now I fully understand why. I mean, it requires you to go through all the menus in real time.
Yeah.
It also ties game's sort of contextual co-op system.
I mean, I love
it's a good design choice.
At least conceptually, I love that shit where you're in a really dangerous environment that feels really dangerous. And if you want to actually like change your equipment, you have to like hunker down in a corner and feel like you're actually digging through your backpack while like looking over your shoulder, and you hear some weird shit coming from around the corner, you know, and you have to like back out of the menu to be, oh shit. And
exactly.
Yeah. That, I mean, it sounds like it's appropriate for the kind of experience that they're encouraging here.
It is. And it's really nice.
You see Dead Space does that? Oh yeah. Cause all of their menus are the holographic shit.
Right.
Yeah.
And I really like that aspect of this game, and it's funny because I really thought I wouldn't. And overall, it really contributes to the feeling of this game, which is, and you know, this is again, is very similar to how I talked about Far Cry 2, but you do have to just get yourself to the point where you are this guy in this horrible, dismal environment, and you are, for whatever reason, punishing yourself with this nonsense and just doing it again and again. And I, I don't know if I'm actually going to beat this game because it does require a big time investment, and the way that has been the most productive for me to play is to play it in sort of a community-based way. And I think that's the reason this game's been talked about so much is because, you know, when you're, when other people, you're on a web forum or whatever, and other people are talking about it, people are giving tips with each other.
Yeah.
They're offering suggestions about how to play, what kind of classes to do, where to go. All that stuff makes you more excited. Just talking to all those people about it. And
there are games that really, really are, they feel like they're kind of meant for that.
I would say Bethesda's games are the same way. Those games always generate big sort of community threads for different reasons. But
yeah, it's just, it's when stuff is actually meaningfully difficult to the point where you feel like if you passed something, you actually have valuable knowledge you can share with somebody else without being able to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And also just if there's a really broad space of discoverable shit where you can be like, oh, I found something that I haven't heard anybody else talk about.
That's fine.
so I'll tell everybody about this unique thing and then they can go find it. Yeah, I mean, that is a really cool aspect of video games and some specific ones that, you know, kind of encourage that even more.
Yeah. And I would recommend to people who try this game and are frustrated by it to try to immerse themselves in that kind of situation, just because I know some people who say the exact opposite. Like, no, man, the way you get value out of this is by just powering through yourself and figure everything out. And I'm sure that's fine for some people.
Well, but isn't there actually a game mechanic in the game if you play it when you're connected to the internet where people can, that have already played parts of it, give you clues?
Yes, which is cool. And you can rate those clues.
Yeah. That seems really awesome.
It is awesome.
And it also like,
or you just, the messages you find on the ground?
Yeah. And you also find, I guess, in the same spot sometimes or whatever, like places that a guy got killed by an enemy, and it actually captures video of how he got killed, like in gameplay, so you can see stuff to look out for. Or whatever. Like,
yeah, sort of.
That shit seems awesome.
Yeah, that stuff gets. I've sort of,
is it like a ghost?
Ignore most of that at this point.
It is just like because a ghost.
After, I mean, like a race ghost.
You know,
no,
like a race.
It's not like ghost. The top ghost.
I thought it was like a top
it
ghost.
It is.
It's like the lowest ghost. In world it's replay.
The, yeah,
it's,
the lowest.
It's the ghost. Worst ghost.
It's his own ghost.
You watch him. You watch a ghost as he becomes a ghost.
Yes, you do, right?
But it's top ghost.
The creation of a ghost.
But yeah, I like the messages. Ghost. The ghost stuff gets a little old because you don't see the enemy that killed him or anything. It's pretty much everyone you play is almost the same, unless it's falling off a ledge. It's pretty much all just a guy getting hit a bunch of times and then dying. Sometimes you can use them to sort of do reconnaissance, kind of, if you see a guy go around a corner and then die, but most of the time it's easier just to be careful.
I've heard a couple funny stories, mostly about guys falling off ledges.
Yeah, that is always hilarious, especially because there are occasionally times when it looks like you can get past, like, you know, there'll be a little ledge that looks like you can walk on.
You see the other guy
right.
do it. Yeah.
That's when ghosts are most valuable. I have determined. But no, it's a cool game. I don't know what my impression sounds like, but I'm really impressed by it.
Sounds like an 8. No, I just made that up. I don't know.
It sounds like it makes me want to play it.
Yeah, it's a kind of game that I'm really glad exists. Again, I don't know if it's the kind of thing I'm going to stick with long enough to beat, just because I do get to the point after a while where I think I've beat like 5 bosses so far.
Yeah.
And you know, there are times when after a while, it's one of those games that forces me to ask myself, why exactly am I still doing this?
Yeah.
But it is a really impressive game, and it is really well designed, and I'm really happy someone made it, and it's really surprising that From Software made it.
Oh, From Software?
They usually make stuff that I could not possibly care less about.
Such as
a bunch of mech games all the time, like Chromehounds.
Chromehounds,
yeah. Oh, they make Core, don't they make Armored Core, that's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah. I don't care about any of that stuff, but they made this game, and it's really crazy, and maybe someone would like to play it.
Yeah.
I think it's been one of Atlas's better selling games.
Yeah, apparently copies are having to be reprinted.
Yeah, apparently it has like a big... I mean, it kind of makes sense to me that compared to the rest of Atlas's catalog, which is usually like PSP and PS2 right. turn-based RPGs, that right. this thing would grab more people's NDS attention.
Games, yeah.
That's cool for them. I mean, I've always liked Atlas as a publisher just because they pull in such wacky stuff.
Yeah.
And this is like wacky even for Atlas. Like, this is kind of out of character for Atlas published stuff, so I thought it was interesting.
It was a Sony
game
in Japan.
Oh, really?
I mean, it's developed by Sony, but Sony also published it in Japan.
Hmm.
And I guess just didn't feel like it over here.
And that's weird. So Atlas is publishing a Sony-developed game in the U.S.
Huh. That kind of thing has happened before. That's kind of crazy. I guess Sony of America just thought it was too niche of a thing for first party to bother with.
That's really cool that Sony wouldn't just sit on it.
Yeah,
then,
yeah, I know.
You could see some, like, no, we're not going to publish it and nobody else is either. Fuck yeah. Like, that's cool.
But yeah, Atlas is cool. I don't even like necessarily most of their games, but I'm really glad that someone's bringing them over.
Yeah, yeah.
They're one of those that's companies that I'm really happy about, and I think they're really cool, even if I'm not necessarily their direct market.
Yeah.
But sometimes they publish this.
This reminds me of a thing I was watching a video of today. Have you guys seen this game, Half Minute Hero?
Yeah, I feel like that would get really old pretty soon.
I don't know. Have you actually seen much about it, or do you just kind of read the description?
I saw a pretty lengthy gameplay.
Did you watch that giant bomb thing? Yeah, that's what I watched too. It made it look pretty interesting. It's a hilarious, like, very meta concept. It's this PSP game that's being brought over by XSEED, which is kind of like...
They're like the mini Atlas.
Yeah, they're like more Atlas. Yeah, like, right. If Atlas doesn't
more
get
Atlas
it,
than Atlas.
Then we'll get it. And it might probably even be even wackier than what Atlas would have brought over. And yeah, what is it? It's basically like riffing on sort of Dragon Quest?
Yeah.
Dragon Warrior?
Warriors?
Yeah. No. Like kind of 8-bit RPG stuff, but boiling it down really, really far to in both play length and mechanics. So I guess the premise is that, you know, you're a hero in this Final Fantasy 1-ish kind of world, and there's an evil monster who has found a spell that will destroy the world in 30 seconds, and then the time goddess comes to you and is like, you need to prevent the world from being destroyed, and you only have 30 seconds, but if you pray to me, I can extend that, like, if you get enough, I don't know, money or something like that. And so each level is a different challenge, which is a different way that this demon is trying to keep you from beating him in 30 seconds.
Mm.
And you kind of go across this little tiny, you know, world map. And like the thing that I saw on the giant bomb was like, he was in a castle across a bridge that was broken. So within 30 seconds, you had to find where the hammer was and bring it to a carpenter so he could fix the bridge. And between there, you would like hit random battles, where the random battles are completely automated. It just shows your guy hitting the enemy.
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
Which, you know, not too dissimilar to how some of those JRPG battles
right.
can be won.
Yeah. And you lose health and get money from it, and you basically have to, you know, finish a leg of the quest and get back to the time goddess's whatever statue in time to spend some of that money on getting more time, and then, you know, finish the next leg of the quest and then beat the bad guy. And so you basically go through a very tiny JRPG in probably, you know, a few 30-second extensions. And it's like, that was Half Minute Hero 1, and then the next level is, they call it like the sequel. Now Half Minute Hero 2
from level 1 again.
Yeah, right. And it's the bad guy trying to destroy the world in 30 seconds in a different way. And I don't know, it looks cool. Really kind of self-referential.
Yeah,
and
I mean, it
clever.
Almost looks like a really fleshed out version of the I think it was a Flash game. Did you guys see the linear RPG?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It looks
yeah.
very sort of like that, but with actual gameplay systems,
things
of,
to do,
and like an overworld map.
Yeah.
Calling the next level the sequel is my favorite part of that.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It's just like you know, there's all different characters you can play, and the main sort of fighter one is Hero 30, and then the next level is Hero 32, and it's just the sequel to that, and it just
right.
keeps going.
Yeah.
And I think you can play the bad guy too. It's just
I don't know.
There's a whole bunch of different options.
Yeah, but it's like you go through the automated battles and you upgrade your equipment and stuff. It is just the basic tenets of that stuff, but pretty much as it seems as complicating action for more of an adventure game, kind of, you know, like the stuff I watched at least was you have to find who will solve the puzzle and then get the thing to solve it with. And yeah, it looked like fun. It's too bad I don't have a PSP.
It looks kind of cool, but I have a feeling after a while, I mean, unless more surprising things come out of it, it seems
Well, I mean, it's very episodic, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think that it has a continual, like, game ramp as you go through the sequels, and then they come up with a new kind of twist or puzzle on it each time. So if they were kind of, if they kept it funny, I don't know, it could be good.
Yeah.
I'd play it.
Would you?
I would, theoretically.
I might.
Yeah.
You can borrow my PSP.
Okay. Yeah. Can I also borrow your copy of Half Minute Hero?
You can buy a copy and use it on my hardware.
Oh.
And I'll charge you for it.
Damn.
It's a $100 deposit.
I don't know if that's a good deal.
Yeah, just pirate it.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Man, the guy
Breed
Q
on. Games.
Yeah, that's why I said that actually. Yeah.
Oh, what was it?
Q Games, the guys who make Pixel Junk, said they're not gonna be to do any more PSP games because
Dylan Cuthbert said this on his Twitter. He's sort of backtracking a little bit and saying that he was misquoted. Okay.
Well, he wasn't misquoted.
He wasn't really misquoted. I think he didn't mean to say as much as he said. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
My brain kept talking.
Yeah. But yeah, apparently he's worried about Pixel Junk Monsters piracy on the PSP.
So. Is it? Oh, because you can like just put a memory stick in there or whatever?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah,
some I've never played a PSP. Some sort of firmware modification. PSPs seem to be modded all the time.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Well, I mean, that's a huge, huge, huge part of why Sony's bringing out the PSP, or why they did just bring out the PSP Go.
Yeah, apparently.
Is that, you know, it's obviously much harder to pirate. In fact, apparently, even taking out the battery on that system, it's very likely your system will be rendered inoperable. I mean, the battery is enclosed in such a way that opening it up to take it out will basically destroy your system. So they're just trying to do anything they can to stop people from, like, you know, overwriting the firmware, doing anything that could allow for piracy.
I bet no one will get around that ever.
it'll probably be a lower piracy rate than the regular PSP.
Yeah.
Yep. You want to take a break for a second?
Let's do it.
Hey!
See you later after the break.
Video games. So, we're actually not on a break because I just remembered I have a song for this week, which I haven't in a while. Well, I guess I did
Holy crap!
A few weeks ago, and a lot of people still don't know, but it's on the website.
Oh, yeah, there's
we
another
just didn't
song.
Put it on the episode.
That one didn't count.
No, mm-mm. It didn't.
It wasn't on the episode. It wasn't on the cast.
Yeah.
It didn't get cast out into the internet.
It's not canon.
No. When someone sets up our Wikipedia page, they will know which to consider. All right.
So what?
In the hour before our page is deleted for relevance.
What song are you adding to the Idle Thumbs canon today?
This song is called Space Asshole, and it's about, it's about Red Faction Gorilla.
Perhaps the reason for deletion.
What the hell? What? This is about a site that talks about space assholes and super douches and wizards. This cannot possibly be notable.
It's not notable even if we didn't talk about it.
That's true.
Space assholes and douches.
Yeah.
And wizards.
Well, get ready.
Sounds
for that.
Notable to me.
It's coming right now.
I can't wait.
It's because it's starting.
In 2125, I was on a mining colony on Mars. Just a quiet backwater facility among the stars. And then one day, I was minding my own business. I was mining my own ore. And there it was.
That was nice.
Space asshole. In a truck flying off the ridge. Space asshole. Up came his hammer, smashed my boss right in the face. Space asshole, planting charges left and right. Space asshole, all he does is annihilate and fight. Sign up for this. started to get away. Somewhere remote, just a place where I could earn myself a day's pay without being smoked. But every time I think I'm safe, every time I think it's calm, I'm wrong. Space asshole, hammer swinging, buildings falling down. Space asshole, laying waste to this entire town. Asshole comes out of nowhere to destroy. Space asshole, phantom carnage is all he can enjoy. The space asshole.
Space asshole. I was happy every
is
single
this
time.
Oh shit. Cyborg lady.
Turns out that's
just
someone's head.
Oh my god.
Oh man,
surprise ending.
Is that part of the song?
No, it was in my like list of things.
Oh seriously? That just happened to
yeah,
wow.
It's like
oh,
stuff Jesus. To listen to for volume levels and things.
I approve.
Yeah, that's good. No, I was happy every time you said space asshole.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
You were happy many times.
I was. It's the best. Anyway. Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we back from a break, I guess?
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
back.
I guess we're back.
Oh, man, okay.
Hey.
What's up, dudes?
It was cool doing that break.
Games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Musical break.
Musical interlude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Do you?
You want to talk about a video game, Nick?
Sure.
Oh, yeah, you guys
can talk about
Uncharted,
a video
the
game.
Other game that we're everyone's supposed to talk about.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Oh man,
Uncharted 2. I mean,
yeah, the sequel.
Two Among Thieves.
Yeah,
right.
Rated T for teen.
I don't know if that's that great of a subtitle.
It makes me think of the stealth level.
It makes me think of Sly Cooper.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Uncharted 2, the Thievius Raccoonus.
Yeah. Sly Raccoon, as he's known in some territories.
I like the typeface that they write Among Thieves in.
I don't remember it, but
yeah, me either.
I bet it's awesome.
Looks pretty nice.
Yeah, also Among Thieves does just remind you of the museum heist.
Yes.
Of knocking out 10 guards in the fountain screen, which is the only part that I didn't like in what
oh, wait,
is
by the way, also, things. Jake Rodkin played a video game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like,
yeah, it was crazy.
I keep talking about games I'm playing right now.
Yeah.
What is this?
I don't know. It's kind of
yeah,
weird.
Toys R Us wanted me to buy 3 games for the price of 2 games, so I bought my own copy of Brutal Legend and Uncharted 2 and Arkham Asylum, and I haven't
nice.
Played. Oh, man. You're loading
it's
up
good,
on the
great
and
work.
I bought
yeah.
the third-person
I bought
my
Scenarium as well, but I haven't played beyond the first few screens.
Oh, yeah.
That's
played,
fine, but I'm still proud
well.
Of you.
I know. It's the best.
You've got 4 games to play right now.
I know!
And you've actually
I'm good
played
like
actually,
2
of them.
Have you beat Brutal Legend yet?
No.
Okay. So you got 4 games to play.
Yeah. I gotta
oh,
play them.
Wow. All these episodes of Idle Thumbs... You're going to be talking about them.
I know. Oh, man. Get ready, everyone.
Your gamer score is going to go up by like 1,000%.
Like a new era.
a new
yeah.
era of Idle Thumbs is
yeah, you
soon,
guys,
soon to appear.
I mean, yeah. You, what, like, by like, I don't know. I'm really looking forward to like 52, 3 when you will have played all this
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. It's going yeah. oh, yeah. to be so good.
One awesome. Every week. Let's set that
like
goal.
Age?
Yeah. The new age of games.
What do you think
and
of
dragons.
And Sorry, I wasn't paying attention to you.
You're talking about the new shit?
The new shit. Before we talk about Uncharted, I have to tell a stupid Dragon
Age
story.
We already were talking about it.
No, Chris can put the brakes on any conversation.
That's what I do. the first night when I was playing
Demon's
Souls.
Just pulls the e-brake.
Yeah. Like a record scratch in there, too.
Sure. Squealing tires and a record scratch. Yeah. You pull the e-brake, okay, causing
the Mario boss. Yoshi's Island boss is destroyed.
Yeah. All right. What about Dragon Age?
What about Dragon Age?
So the first night I was playing Demon's Souls, when I was still being completely perplexed by it and was dying constantly.
Yeah.
I played for probably 4 hours straight or so. It was in the evening, and then after that, I went on the internet and I saw that I shut off the system, right? And I went onto my computer and I was looking around. It's like, oh, BioWare releasing the character creator for Dragon Age. All right, I'll give that a shot. And so I downloaded it and I used it, and there was a little like splash screen or something, and it was like, order this game on Steam or like pre-order or whatever, and you get this crazy ring, and it'll, you know, it's just a little bonus item for getting it through us or whatever. And it was like plus regeneration and like plus strength or something. And I swear to God, just looking at that item and knowing what it did and knowing that I'd be able to equip it in a game that I actually know how to play was like the most comforting feeling after basically being punished, like flagellated by Demon's Souls for 4 hours. Like, not that that necessarily means obviously anything about Dragon Age, but it was like, oh, I know how this game's going to play. This game's going to be a comforting, familiar experience. After basically just getting my brains beat to a fucking
pulp. So the new shit is a warm blanket.
Basically. Like, seriously. That's
it's still warm. The new shit is a warm blanket.
I'm just going to burrow deep into that new shit and just nestle.
Dragon Age Origins. Oh, man. A warm blanket of new shit.
Oh, man. Sorry. This new shit is a warm blanket.
But seriously, it's hard to convey exactly like what the sensation was, but it there was a really like sharp
sticky
just sort of,
it was just, you know, warm just crawl right in there,
encase myself in it,
in this pre-order ring. Encase yourself in this ring.
And you know what's funny about it is I don't even like stuff like that. I think pre-order are bullshit. It wasn't the fact that I could get a pre-order or anything. It was just the fact that
you knew what impenetrable.
Yeah, yeah, like
you knew what a ring of plus one strength and plus 25% regeneration,
like,
is.
Oh, I know. And it's probably going to give me like a very straightforward level requirement to wear it. And like, oh, you know, it's like,
level requirements.
You know.
Oh.
Well, I mean,
I miss you.
All the systems.
What is so fucked up about Demon's Souls?
It's not fucked up.
Doesn't it have levels?
Sort of. Basically, there are no character levels. You only level up your stats. Yep. And every time you level up one stat, your soul level goes up. And the only thing your soul level is a number that tells you how many times you've leveled your stats up. It's just a way to generally say, like, if this guy's soul level 30, it means he's upgraded 30 stats in total.
Yeah. You have a soul level and you also collect souls. Do you use the souls to upgrade your stats to reflect your soul level?
Yes.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
If there the soul level doesn't tell you
there's only one kind of soul.
A demon soul.
My mom told me there's only one kind of soul.
There's other stuff you get from bosses, but it doesn't matter for this discussion. But
there's two kinds, actually.
It's not that unusual game mechanically, but it doesn't help you out very much at all. I mean, when you look at a weapon, it has like 80 million numbers on it, and they're all just next to little symbols, and there's no words that like say things next to them. I mean, it's,
you can't, like, how do you find out what they are?
Well, you can go into different views, or you could, there's some that just are never labeled in on that screen, and you have to look in the manual, or at least I don't know. There's just
video games.
It's the interface.
Classic.
As much as I like some parts of the interface, they could have been a little less obtuse in some areas.
Is the manual like
spiral bound?
Spiral bound or cone bound?
Oh man, another story about the manual.
What is cone
bound? So I chose.
It's the one. It's the plastic like ribbon that combs the combs.
Okay, no, I know what you mean.
We have a comb binder at work. No one knows how to use it. It's terrifying. If you put your hand in it, oh,
I don't want to think about that.
Be comb bound.
Gross.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about now. It's the Venus flytrap.
Yeah, the black
two metal
thing.
Yeah. Strips.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, make your thing look,
well,
like
it's usually
crappy.
Black plastic, isn't it?
Yeah, or an arm.
Or an arm?
You know, in Demon's Souls, they're bound with human arms.
Fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, the manual for Demon's Souls.
But yeah, I looked in the manual because I just to look up some stats actually for that reason. And I'd initially started the game as a magician because, you know, fucking wizard. And so yeah. I started going through the game, and it was fucking hard. This was the first night.
Does he have a top hat?
No, he doesn't. He's a magician. He's kind of shit.
He's not a full blown wizard.
He doesn't
Does
look
he have
like
a top hat. No, he's a magician.
He's kind of a bullshit magician, to be honest.
I think magicians normally do have top hats.
This
Chris.
One doesn't. This guy's bullshit.
Did he have a cape that was black with a red like liner on?
This
the
guy
inside?
Has no accoutrement of a magician.
A
he doesn't. He doesn't have a fucking black wand with a white end of it.
He has none of these things. And
he's
so
a squirting flower.
No,
I don't know if magicians.
So you have
a
bunch of handkerchiefs tied together.
Right.
He does not have any mustache.
Out of his mouth kind of a or scarf, or I mean, out of his scarf. Sorry, that's the weirdest magician. It's a meta magician.
So I was playing this guy for the first night, and it was just impossible. And
you have spats.
I finally, at the end, I was looking in the manual just for stat reasons. And at the beginning, it's like, make sure to take extremely high level of care in your initial choice of character because it will have a drastic impact on the difficulty of the game. And
don't
I'm like,
play
well,
as
what?
The magician.
Like, yeah. Well, then I went online after that, and I'm like, I was looking, reading about classes, and everyone's like, all right, there's three classes that are fucking impossible, like this one, and the magician. And I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. And so
how many different classes are there?
A lot. Quite
oh,
a few,
really?
Like over a dozen.
Oh, so it's not. Oh, Jesus. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, because I'm thinking of like System Shock 2, where it's like you pick the Marines, which is all guns, and that's easier.
No,
and you pick
no.
Psy, and it's all
you
spells,
don't know what
and obviously.
Shit does
it's
in this game when you start. It's ridiculous. Yeah. And what's funny is because every stat is updated, every like attribute is upgraded independently, any class can become any other class. I mean, there's no arbitrary limitations on what you
it's
can
just
wield
a question of where you
just
start, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Which is cool. I like that aspect of it. But you
it's
also
like
have no idea why to choose.
It doesn't matter where you start. You can always get to the top.
Oh, right.
That
sure.
was amazing.
All right.
Yeah, a magician anyway. Could bootstrap his way up.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Uncharted 2.
All right.
I just wanted to tell that weird ring story because it was an odd sensation when I was doing it. It was very comforting.
Yeah.
So Uncharted.
So yeah, I hadn't played the Uncharted 2 demo. I don't know if I even had a PS3 when it came out. I usually am not that into this kind of game, which is just
neither am I.
Do things and it's extraordinarily cinematic, but it's supposed to be telling you that it's an actual high agency game.
Yeah.
I was like peeing my pants with happiness at the very opening thing on the train car that goes falling off a cliff, and then it would intercut to the backstory cutscenes and stuff.
Yeah,
oh, it was good.
Can you describe to me what the experience of playing this game is like? Because I've watched some preview videos, and I would need to know that it was different than that to want to play.
Well,
what is the
see,
thing you don't like?
Yeah,
that you
I suspect
to.
I suspect that the videos that you saw, I mean, there are aspects
of this game.
Well, no, there are aspects of this game that I actually do not enjoy because of this reason. Like, it is very cutscene heavy, and there are moments where it's like you're running through a level and you hit that invisible barrier, and then the cutscene plays in the middle of the level. And some of them are long, and it's just, and they're well done cutscenes. I think, you know,
it's,
I mean,
the stuff I've seen, it hasn't even really been when they've interjected cutscenes, which...
It's set piece stuff.
Yeah,
where
it's, just,
it's
like,
just like, well, this game is playing itself.
The entire level feels like a playable cutscene from stuff that I've seen, which is like, you enter this room and a super mega scripted thing happens, and then you shoot these three guys so you can go to the next place where the exact same thing will happen when you go through that trigger volume.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it feels like you're just turning the crank to make the movie go. Like
it is for sure that game at times, but I mean there
it's
are also
not always
other,
like that.
Well, not I mean it does I mean it does allow you in the way that other action games do to approach fights from whatever angle you want to and do, you know, crazy wacky things in the middle of a fight. But I mean those set piece moments where like the floor is falling out from under you and stuff, obviously that you know is going to be the same, play out the same way every time. So I mean, if that kind of thing just bothers you on principle, but it does sort of bother me to a degree, but it does. It's so seamless.
This game is really well made for the kind of game that it's trying to be, and it doesn't.
Yeah,
it offends me less because
I think that's what it is. It's just so well done that it makes
design,
up for it.
The look is really good. It's one of the few games that I've played that isn't trying to be hilarious.
But it's still
also,
funny sometimes.
But like, the wit carries reasonably, and the voice acting is really, really good. The mocap acting is sometimes super mocap, which is frustrating. But like,
I don't
mind listening to the characters talk to each other in cutscenes.
Right.
Like, and someone in one of the early cutscenes says, "What could possibly go wrong?" And someone else laughs it off. and yeah. it doesn't play as a bullshit joke. It actually sounds like two people making that ironic comment in a story. And it,
there are actually some fairly
that was one of the things that the all the UK Thumbs guys said they loved about the first Uncharted is they would make these comments, things would happen on the screen, and then they would make some stupid joke, and then the character in the game would say the exact same thing, and their minds would explode at the.
that does kind of happen, yeah.
Yeah,
it's the kind of mocapped game where you just imagine people sort of bullshit like act like you know sort of improv maybe like on the stage.
Yeah, I don't know. It's nice.
It's
good. Interesting to know if they played it that way. You know, I mean, if they generated some of that dialogue just by having guys.
It sounds like they may
sit
have.
There and crib some of it from there because that'd be kind of awesome.
I know that it's the demo, but the opening 10 minutes of this game made me pretty happy.
Yeah. Why did you pee your pants?
Yeah. I mean, it's,
Jake's
you know,
pants were peed.
It's
classic. You have the full game, though,
video
right?
game stuff. I do have the full game, but I'm only on chapter 3 at this point, which is the first sort of big jungly thing.
Right.
But the opening is kind of Bioshocky of just guy wakes up in a wrecked train car. It's instead of a plane.
Oh.
But then you... You sort of climb out and you're covered in blood and sort of trudging through the snow or like hanging on sort of Prince of Persia or I guess Uncharted style to the edges
really
of the
Assassin's
car
Creed
as it
style.
Slowly falls off a cliff.
But, and then you come across this mysterious lighthouse.
No, certain events will happen. Like you'll get an explosion occurs or you get shot and injured and your guy blacks out. And then when he blacks out just without loads, sometimes even via a cross dissolve, which crushes my face when a real time 3D cross dissolve occurs back to,
explain what you mean by that.
Like in films, especially like older films, cross dissolves were a pretty classic way of doing a transition effect where one scene dissolves into another without a fade to black.
What do you mean by full 3D?
I mean, like it's not cross dissolving into a Bink video or a load screen or something.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
like,
yeah, that's awesome.
Literally,
yeah, yeah,
you've
got
a guy like it's just in that snow environment, whatever. Then it just cross dissolves to a tropical beach, and it's 3 months earlier, and it's him meeting two thieves, and they sort of talk about their plan.
He's among them.
He's among them, but just the way that it felt very cinematic in a way that I actually like, and the few games pull off in the correct way. Where the sort
that sounds very Indiana Jonesy, which I guess is
also it is Indiana Jonesy.
Like that was there's all the stuff where they're
well, it's kind of like Indiana Jones as well.
Oh, does this game is it reminiscent at all of Indiana Jones?
Obviously, it is
to a degree.
It had in that opening cutscene or in that opening sort of segment, it had the classic Indiana Jones moment of one of them. Discovering what the sort of cryptic thing about an artifact means, and then like, of course, Marco Polo, da da da. Only three ships came back, whatever, and they're all getting excited about it, and I was excited about it, and then realized that not since the good Indiana Jones movies had I actually had that archetypal scene.
Yeah.
Made me go,
right.
Oh man, maybe they're gonna find those 12 ships. What? Why do I care about this? And that made me want to play the rest of the game. So well played. And then I got to a room where I had to take out 10 guys in a crappy stealth screen and threw down the game for a day until you told me that it got good again after that one screen.
Yeah, it does. It gets progressively
Everyone
good.
Everyone has mentioned that.
Even the jungle section after that is not really my favorite part. I mean, it for me, it got better and better as I went along.
Awful stealth will ruin any game.
Yes.
It really
it's like
does.
The third
really
screen
the
where it's like you have that amazing train car stuff and that cutscene, all the narrative setup, and then it's like, now we're going to break into a museum. Again, sweet cross dissolve. It's rubbing everyone else's face in the world.
Yeah.
They're cross dissolving between two extreme PS3 scenes. I guess you can do that if you have a system that's awesome. But then you sneak through a duct, take out two guards, and it's easy, and then just get.
Jesus.
Owned.
Stupid
I got
stuff.
Owned maybe 25 times
that
in a row.
A
I mean,
it
was awful.
To figure out the exact one route that you're supposed to snake through and take out all those guards.
Yeah, and I was telling somebody, they're like, oh, I did that in like two tries. It took me like 20.
That's something that's really impressive about Arkham Asylum, actually, is that they were like, well, we're an action game, exploration game, big other game. Oh, and stealth is actually going to be one of the other things we do, and it's easily one of the best parts of the game.
Yeah,
you know, like because
my favorite part of the game.
Yeah, because like rolling the dice on putting stealth into your game that isn't exclusively a stealth game is
that's
super fucking scary.
Did you notice
dice are
in that one room?
You.
Yes,
there were surfaces that were not tagged as like stealthable.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's the
like,
thing. It's not just that it's a stealth level; it's that the mechanics in the game aren't suited for that specific level at all. Like, I mean,
yeah,
I was getting the camera clipping through the wall and just
was,
like
there
random.
There were a couple parts where there was a guard who was about 4 feet up. Like, there's a staircase sort of around the corner, and you can see the guard over a sort of handrail.
Yeah,
and you try to duck up against that wall.
Right. Yes. Yeah. No, it's awful.
It doesn't work.
And that wall is not supported for stealth.
I know.
And the guard therefore can see you through it and sounds the alarm and starts...
Hey, you!
What?
There we go again. Like, whatever he says afterwards.
Anyway, after that, I enjoyed the rest of what I've played so far, which is only another chapter and a half.
Yeah.
But,
No, it's pretty good.
It's actually good. Whatever. Ignore that stealth part.
The parts that sort of...
I don't think you're able to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you guys ever...
It's one room.
Did you guys ever play... the original Crimson Skies on the PC.
Yeah, I did actually a long time ago.
Yeah.
In like 2002.
That was the first game I'm aware of that has the awesome like 30s serial stylistic like jumping off point.
Yeah.
At least for modern games, and completely nails it.
It
like
was awesome.
The writing in that game is incredible, and the radio play, like voice acting, is amazing. But the reason I actually bring it up is, I mean, there's sort of a parallel with the whole Indiana Jones serial influence thing.
For people who don't know, that was a different game than the Xbox One.
Yes.
That one, the PC one, was developed by Faza, right? And then the Xbox One was Zipper, I guess.
Yeah. No, I think you have that backwards, actually.
Really?
Yeah, Zipper Interactive did the first one.
Oh, my bad. Okay, sorry.
But anyway, yeah, it's really, really, really good. And it's like a kind of arcade flight action sim. It's great. I played it like 3 or 4 years ago for the first time, and it was awesome. But the reason I bring it up is because they knew that not everybody was going to play it with a joystick, and demanding flight, you know, simulator stunt sequences are not that easy with like mouse keyboard. And any mission that you fail like more than once, it gives you the option just to skip it, even the first time that you've played it. So you can just be like, man, I can't finish this thing, but I want to keep playing this game.
Yeah.
Therefore, I will skip it and keep playing the game.
Flight sims have that a lot.
Holy shit, this stealth room. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You go to hell forever.
I
never
would be
play
two chapters further along in Uncharted 2 if I could have skipped that one stupid stealth room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I
well,
mean,
what this game
even,
does,
even if you, even if
smart.
You could like let someone skip it and give them a summary of any story shit that would have happened in there, like
what this game does that is smart is if it will notice when you don't know where the hell you're supposed to go at that particular moment, and it'll say bring up the D-pad.
Already.
And if you hit the top up
then it'll
on
do
the D-pad,
sort of Prince of Persia: Sands of Time
it'll
camera
do the cut,
fly
yes,
up.
The the widescreen zoom in on whatever point you're
really
supposed
helpful.
To find.
That's pretty
that's
cool.
really helpful.
But what wasn't helpful was when it gives you a tutorial once. Doesn't check to see if you've done it, and you can never get it back. And that move is not listed in the manual.
Right.
Things like,
wow,
you're crouched around 90 around. You're on like one edge of a square pillar.
Yeah.
You just want to go 90 degrees around. It tells you once. Doesn't check to see if you've done it. Anyway, that one room is souring what is probably of an extremely solid game that I've really liked playing so far.
I've played through quite a bit of it. It's pretty solid. The concerns that you're having, Steve, are valid, but those sections of set piece stuff, I mean, it's fairly brief when you get to it, and it's seamless. You go from that into a fairly open environment.
It's not necessarily bad. I mean, I don't know.
You probably won't like this game.
In principle, I just like a playable cutscene is like the lowest form of interactivity, and it's but I don't know, the stuff that I saw, it just looked like a scripted event heavy Call of Duty 4 level, but like times 20. And if that was the whole thing, I would probably hate it. But if that's like punctuating things that have actual open
mechanics, I think it's punctuating.
Then it could be
the
totally
combat
acceptable.
It's got climbing on stuff and shooting dudes.
Whoa!
Yeah,
I know where you're coming from.
It really is
Steve.
Sort of
that
broken
was,
up into like Prince of Persia segment, and then we have like a Gears of War sort of segment, and then it sort of goes back and forth as you go through, and between those
the
are
climbing stuff to the shooting dudes.
Yes,
stuff.
Yeah. But there's some good actual scenes where it's just climbing for a long time, like where you're just. You know, there isn't any shooting whatsoever for a fairly long segment.
So I'm sitting here going, wow, this sort of grappling on physical world mechanic is great.
Yeah.
And everyone else is just like, where were you 2 years ago or whatever, but whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't play it originally either.
I've definitely heard more buzz about this game, it seems, than the first one.
Well, like, it's riding the sequel wave of well-received first game.
Probably more people have PS3s, and it seems like they very, very, very directly addressed a lot of the issues.
Yeah,
first,
I think
which was already a pretty well-regarded
game. It
seems
like, it's like way the production values and polished. It's generally seems to be regarded as higher than the first game, and it just kind of puts it over the top. That's the impression I'm getting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I know where you're coming from, Steve. That's the reason I didn't play the first one. The sort of style of game design of we're going to make you feel like you're in a Hollywood action movie.
Yep.
That specific design goal, I usually am really, really, really bored by.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
heard enough positive stuff about this game.
Yeah, exactly.
What's kind of funny about this game is that it's not that a lot of, like, the gameplay, it's really unrealistic. Like, there are sections of this game where you're climbing up, like, a street pole, like doing all these wacky things, like, that you just would never see in a Hollywood action movie. Like, I don't know. It's weird. He basically is like the Assassin's Creed dude, but just, you know, like on a modern street.
Isn't he supposed
somewhere?
To be just like a guy?
Yeah, he is. But there, I mean, it is really a lot of Prince of Persia stuff where he's doing, you know, crazy things. So it's not.
He's doing things that maybe Mel Gibson would do once in Lethal Weapon.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Consistently. Yeah.
But as his core mechanic for world navigation.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it seems like the overall experiential goal of just, we want to make you feel like you're in a big Hollywood blockbuster movie is not in and of itself a negative thing, but it just seems like saying, and so what we're going to do is make a linear movie that you get to be inside, is like the most facile approach to actually accomplishing that. Whereas, like, for instance, GTA 4 and like those videos, those YouTubes that you've linked of whatever they're called, badassery.
Yeah, GTA 4 badassery.
Yeah, but like GTA 4 gives you mechanics that allow you to play out scenes that are more amazing and action-packed than most Hollywood action movies, yeah, and feel like you're actually motivating the kind of things that happen in a Hollywood heist movie.
Right. As opposed to 7 hours of cutscenes.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean,
well, I'm not saying there aren't cutscenes in it, but cuts, actual nested cutscenes that you have no control over are different than press forward and A to get through this gameplay sequence, which is actually a linear cutscene.
Yeah, yeah. The other difference, though, is that the saying you replicate scenes that are as though they were from a Hollywood action movie, that is different than saying you're playing through a Hollywood action movie. I mean, GTA 4 doesn't make me feel like that at all, really, because so much of it is much more low key, just driving around and stuff.
But I mean, the sequences that actually, like, when all of the parts of that experience come together and you pull off amazing shit, like, it seems like it gets closer to feeling like the protagonist of a Hollywood action movie than where you're just motivating the protagonist of a Hollywood.
Have an emergent scene like that show up. I mean, from what I've played so far.
No, I'm not saying it would. I'm just talking about different kind of design philosophies behind the same general goal.
I don't think it's the same general goal. I mean, if you isolated that out of, if you extracted that out of YouTube, it would be surrounded by a lot of mundanity and just sort of a guy doing something, smashing into a wall, and then kind of just trying again.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, that's not at all a negative. I just mean, I don't think it is the same experiential goal. I mean, I think they're entirely different goals, really. Like, I don't know. I've never gotten that sense from GTA 4. It's maybe almost the equivalent of like The Sopranos or something. You know, like, it's just a super long serial story or something that you're filling in a lot of blanks.
Well, I mean, I think that a lot of people, kind of the reason why they mostly play the sandbox parts of those games, they ignore the story, is because they want to get in huge car chases, you know, like they've seen, and the cops are chasing them and they jump out and shoot at guys.
That's
like
Jake.
That's what I do in GTA.
It feels like the difference between giving the player tools to potentially make scenes from a Hollywood action movie and making one scene that everybody has to play
through. It's a completely different play experience, though. Yeah. I mean, the difference between spending the 15 minutes to actually run over people and getting all the cops to chase you, scout out the jump you want, take the car off of it and then try to hit the freeway and run into the thing. The actual moments that play out, especially in that game when it goes flying into cinematic cam, you earn those a lot more than you do in Uncharted 2.
Yeah.
But a game like Uncharted obviously ensures that just sort of kinetic thrills to your brain per second and stuff on screen is way higher, but you don't earn it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, in fact, the opposite of Demon's Souls.
Yeah.
It's like, it was funny for me to think about, because these are the two PS3 games everybody is talking about right now.
Yep.
And Jesus Christ, are they different.
Mm.
I mean, in every imaginable respect, except that
there's a lot of the same people being positive about both of them.
Which is kind
of
cool.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think it totally is.
Good. Yeah, it's good.
But yeah, you guys made me want to check out Uncharted 2 now.
Yeah. I'm definitely, I haven't played it, and I'm definitely not trying to just be outright negative about it. I'm mostly just using examples of two different approaches.
To be honest, my those are probably my least favorite parts of the game, those moments that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but the rest is good enough to where I enjoy it.
That's cool.
That's, you know, it's not really my favorite style of game either. It's just, the rest of it is.
Yeah, I never seek out stuff like this.
Yeah.
enough people said it was worth getting. That
yeah. Well, I mean, that's how I felt about Call of Duty 4 before I
played it. Oh, let's keep agreeing with ourselves forever here.
That's a good
analogy. Anyway, Uncharted 2, the video game.
Woo! Yeah, take a break. Get some reader mail going on.
Breaking it up.
I like mail.
Video game.
Mike's off.
What did you forget to talk about?
Oh, somebody wanted me to talk about League of Legends really quickly because I played some of the stuff that hasn't been released yet. Nobody wants to hear about that game again, do they?
I'll send in a reader mail really quick. Nick, talk about League of Legends.
Well, as long as Chris is still locating something. I played the new two-lane map. Oh god, nobody's gonna care about this. That game's really good though. League of Legends. I'm actually I was really worried about it because they announced that the European servers wouldn't...
I've got a reader mail that we have to read.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's for me.
Video game.
Did you never figure out what game that was?
No, I did. I did.
What was it?
It was X3.
Oh.
What game were you playing, Nick?
Yeah.
We're back. We found out what game Nick was playing in episode 45.
Yeah, I think I may have actually mentioned that as a possibility, but I couldn't quite remember. But it was because I had played it like a week and a half before that podcast.
Uh-huh.
And that's why it was confusing me because I hadn't played it recently.
Was there anything interesting about X3?
It was X3.
Well, it was before, like, we were talking about space or something, which, you know, I guess we do.
Don't actually do it more.
It was X3. Hi, everybody. Welcome back.
Hey, Steve.
For reader mail.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What kind you got?
This is yours.
Woo.
Time to die.
Whoa. I can't believe you've done this.
Whoops. All right. Mike Todd writes...
Oh, it's reader mail.
It is. Hey, Thumbs. Currently, I'm a console and handheld player, but I have a long computer history that started with the Commodore 64, went to Amiga, Mac, and PC. I was going through my collection of PC games, putting some up on eBay, making some room when it occurred to me that computer games are kind of like records or LPs of video games.
Hmm.
When the Switch was being made from vinyl to CD, a lot of people complained about losing that LP experience of large artwork and inserts. Computer games are kind of the same thing. There's room in the box for inserts, props, and manuals, but all you usually get in a console game case is a manual unless you want to pay more for a special edition. I was wondering what your best unboxing memories are from computer games. For myself, the best was probably Ultima 5, which came with a cloth map, a coin, and a couple of manuals you needed to translate to the game's runic alphabet and to track Lord British's journey.
Whoa. What?
More recently, I dug the hardcover book that came with GTA San Andreas and a cool box for Max Payne 2. I'm a sucker for any kind of map. I had the Oblivion map taped up next to my desk during my whole playthrough. Later, Mike T.
I've never been a map guy, but I do have some favorite manuals.
Yeah. Man,
Ultima 5 came with manuals you had to translate from the in-game language to
ridiculous.
Understand. That's extreme.
So. Pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
That's good.
As we know, none of us have played Ultima.
So yeah, right.
Good. A bunch of people have told me I really, really need to play like Ultima 7.
Yes.
I think, like,
Ultima 7
yes.
is the that's one that the one basically that's... looks like Ultima Online, more or less, like a lower color count.
Uh-huh.
And kind of Ultima, 4 is the one where people kind of say it came into its own and kind of became like a major deal.
Yeah, that's the one that is cited a lot, I think.
Yeah.
Also, Ultima, I think 6 has one of my absolute favorite game boxes ever. Or I think it just says Ultima 6, the Black Gate, and it's just a completely black cover.
Yeah.
God, it looks amazing.
Yeah.
What were you going to say? You were saying something, though, Nick, about...
Oh, yeah. Sid Meier's Gettysburg...
Oh, yeah. I never played that one.
Like a light infantry manual, like handbook.
Oh, awesome.
That actually, like, a lot of it was relevant to the game, but not, like, some of it wasn't.
Uh-huh.
Like, it was just like a little historical artifact. Like,
awesome.
It was amazing.
Yeah. That reminds me of the spiral bound manual for the original Fallout, where the first like 20 pages were just describing what happens when a nuclear bomb goes off.
Yeah,
and when I was like 15 and got that game, I opened it up and just started reading it, and I was like, oh man, yeah, this is interesting. Oh yeah, wait, this is the fifth page. Hold on. Okay, so wait, how? Why?
Where are the controls?
Yeah,
where's the keyboard?
it was
awesome.
It was hilarious. And then I got to the actual part, and it has like notes from the overseer, like pasted over parts of it and stuff. So good.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever have games that came with a keyboard overlay?
I still get those. I think occasionally.
No.
Really? Yeah.
What? In what games? What game has that?
Well, not X3? Not. Oh, you mean like one that actually cuts out and it goes.
Yeah, a cardboard overlay.
Yeah, I remember flight simulators. I got a couple
flight
of those. Yeah, maybe.
Those,
okay, I thought you meant just like a thing that has the keyboard.
I only remember I only remember those from being like 4 years old and playing Commodore 64 games.
Oh yeah,
and there would be like an overlay you'd put over the keyboard that specifically was like told a child how to like control their character. You know, like
Yeah.
And they were weird.
Flight sims used to have ones that. Like, some of them would just, I guess, to maximize sort of compatibility, they would just be a strip that you'd put, like, in between your function key
and
your row of number keys. And
it was, like, it was the gaming equivalent of the WordPerfect shortcut.
Yeah, exactly. WordPerfect had that, too, I had that also for some weird reason.
Yeah, I don't actually have that many memories of stuff like that from games. And stupidly enough, the only, like, game manual that was ever actually, like, near and dear to my heart ever was the Mario 3 manual, which is the opposite of what this guy's talking about. But it's because it had all those, like, Nintendo's renderings of Mario from that era where he had that sort of, like, super thick outlines, really, like, simple style, doing every single move in that game possible ever and in every single suit.
Yeah.
And, I remember this now. Like,
I used that to basically, like, learn how to draw a cartoon character.
That's awesome. Like, it was it was similar because the manual for Double Dragon for the NES, it had a similar thing where it showed, like, the main character like doing really all nice of his karate moves. Like a really nice kind of Fist of the North Star-ish, you know, like, Japanese-style rendering of it before I knew what the fuck any of that shit was. It was just like, man, this is what the guy would look like if he was really doing the move. And I think, I copied them and, like,
I remember I bought the Mario 3 Player's Guide because it had also every single enemy and all of their moves also in that same style. I was like, oh, fuck, this is the best. but PC games, I don't really remember. Like, I have a lot of them, and I'm sure now if I go back and, like, open up Infocom boxes sitting in my house, I would be blown away by the weird collection of feelies that I have.
Yeah.
Like, I know that for sure back when...
called feelies.
Back when LucasArts Adventures, you know, like, early, mid-90s when the good
Loom,
ones were still coming
book
out.
Of patterns and the Indiana I never Jones played Braille Loom. Diary?
No, no, but when I would buy, like, you know, one of the other LucasArts games, I always really look forward to getting the copy of The Adventure.
I was going to say
Because it had a Sam & Max comic in it, and it would have crazy merchandise from the game.
It had,
like
interviews and stuff sometimes.
Yeah, it had interviews with the people who made them. I bought the Gone Jackals CD and Corley Motors shirt out of them after I bought Full Throttle. The Adventure was awesome.
It was rad.
Original Steve Purcell comics in them about
Sierra,
the games
Sierra
that were
had
coming
its own
out.
Magazine too.
Yep.
But The Adventure was cooler because it had a Sam & Max comic in it.
Yeah, a Sam & Max comic about Full Throttle or Day of the Tentacle or whatever.
Or Outlaws or whatever.
Yeah, that stuff is good.
Awesome.
Or Star Wars.
I try to do that sort of stuff at my job because they let me.
Nice.
Like, for Sam & Max, I was able to do a bunch of, like, cheesy pack-in merchandise for the seasons when the DVD came out. And we've done done some print issues of our newsletter that have, like, interviews with our company and comics by people on our art team because I like The Adventurer. And
I
wish more companies would do that and that we could do that more often where I work.
Yep.
But
it will happen less and less.
Yeah.
Basically forever.
I mean, speaking of posters, like, I've definitely known, like, guys that I've known have had, like, the poster of the Alpha Centauri tech tree, you know, they've, like, hung up on their wall and stuff like that.
Civilization and all that.
But there are some CDs that I've bought, just audio CDs, that their booklet folds out into, like, one giant poster that has all of, like, the lyrics and a bunch of art arranged on it, and it's crazy. And it would be pretty awesome to buy a game and take, like, a folded up manual out of it, and then just you unfold it, and it's this huge poster that, like,
I know that Rockstar does that, but that's never stuff that you would ever want to put up. It's the map of the city, then on the back, it's the, like, sort of creepy, unappealing, like, Vice City bikini drawing or whatever.
Right.
Like,
but I'm just picturing, like, all of the manual, all the information that would be in the manual arranged in one gigantic
frame. Right,
yeah,
sort of, like, maybe uncoded.
Chris
nice.
Ware does your manual for you.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome stuff.
That would be really cool.
All right.
What else you got?
JL, or Hypocy.
JLerd.
Has an incredibly long email that I guess we can, like, choose bits from. He has, like, four separate emails, each of which is long.
It's a choose your own email adventure.
Email. Yeah. Oh, man, this also relates to something Steve said, so I'll read this one. Number three. Oh, hey, look what you did. This was sparked by Nick talking about the end of game charts in Civ 4. One technique I think could stand more use is automatic preservation and representation of in-game moments. The major example I'm thinking of is the PC version of Crimson Skies, which automatically took screenshots of certain barnstorming moments and spread them out in your binder as the adventure progressed.
That's awesome.
This was such a dumb little feature, a trigger when the plane crossed a certain polygon plus a sepia filter, but it added so much personality as the game went on because I was constantly thinking back about the things I'd already done when I'd see them in my flyby picture. Small, small things can call up big, complicated memories. Modern analogs, and then he says stuff like Sporpedia, TF2's Killcam, etc. goes on.
Man.
What if GTA occasionally took shots like that when you were in a car and at least one wheel was off the ground? Or when an explosion was happening in your line of sight? What if Left 4 Dead's director had some rudimentary awesomeness algorithm and took shots? et cetera.
TF2 should keep a scrapbook like that. That would be amazing. Of just kill screens.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to have a save mechanic.
I mean, it offers
where
it
it's where it actually is laid out like a character's journal like that, and I guess Crimson Skies did it, but it seemed like a...
Yeah, Crimson Skies was awesome about that, because you would finish a mission, and then you could flip back to all your old missions, and it would have both, like, stuff you'd collected, like little medals and, like, newspaper clippings about what you had done, as well as little photographs that were screenshots of the mission you had actually
played. That is officially the best.
Play that game.
I don't know if I'm going to play it, but I like that.
You will not.
Why don't you? It's probably on goodoldgames.com, maybe.
GOG? PCDL?
I don't think it is.
Maybe it is.
Wink?
PCDL.
All right. I think we all agree that would be cool.
Boost.
What?
Cameron Daigle writes, "Good evening, Thumbs. For some inscrutable reason, I decided to start listening to your cast starting
episode
1. How did
he know it was going to be evening?
I needed some extra cast in my life. Chris's incessant verbal humping of Far Cry 2 led me to dust it off and let up my previous save, which I had long ago abandoned about 2 hours in due to the game being stressful, awkward, and in existence at the same time as Fable 2 and Fallout 3. This time, I tried to relax and enjoy the environment, and holy cow, you guys were right. The craziest thing happened. I was in a Jeep to some driving to some group of people that hate me or whatever. At one point, I decided to reorient myself west, and then he bolds this part. Instead of glancing down at the map, I just oriented myself using the sunset. My brain exploded. I have definitely never instinctively used the sun to figure out which way I was going in any video game before. Far Cry wins. Thanks for reading my non-question.
I
video games,
did that 3 days ago. It was pretty awesome.
Oh, man. In Far Cry 2?
Yeah, in Far Cry 2.
Yeah.
Just walking around San Francisco.
Yep.
Oh.
No, yeah.
I don't do that in real life. Only video games.
Yeah, Nick and I had a minor, like, video game bonding moment on Twitter.
Because it was now the first annual Idle Thumbs Far Cry 2 play-a-thon.
Yeah. Well, because Nick and I, for some reason, had coincidentally both been playing it, and Nick had taken a screenshot of, you know, like a sunset.
Right. It was that moment, actually.
Oh, really?
I was like, oh, the sun's that way. Yeah. Which means I'm going this way. Yeah.
And he posted the screenshot to the Twitter and just happened to have the bolt action rifle out, and I was just like, nice bolt action. Because I love that gun. And
it's the best. Awesome gun. It's the best gun.
It was hilarious. Because, I generated some great player stories, and it reminded me of the awesome things that can happen in that game when I was playing it. It was cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
Man.
All right. Jake Rodkin writes, "Call next episode in space. Also talk about Sim Mars."
Done.
What
did
you want to say?
No, this episode is called In Space, but you said last week that you wanted to talk about Sim Mars for a second.
Well, yeah, we could talk about that for a second. I mean, some new screenshots. I mean, this project, I guess, had been known about. I was sort of unaware. I'd never heard of it. But it was a project that was, I guess, in development just as The Sims was released and was hence canceled and all resources diverted to The Sims franchise. But it was going to be this realistic take on colonization. It was going to be a Sim City, but your goal being to colonize Mars with realistic NASA science stuff. You know, I mean, the screenshots are really interesting. They're like, you know, actual,
they're like little rovers driving around in these little outposts, kind of.
This sounds like an Idle Thumbs approved game concept.
Yeah. Like, I saw those screenshots and heard the concept, and I was like, God damn it.
Yep.
Why would you
stupid
not make
Sims
this happen?
Sims night out on the town with pets or whatever.
I really like The Sims. I also would have really liked Sim Mars and to
exactly
use a rover to Mars? Get some stuff and
The Sims
use it.
On Mars.
Yeah.
It's coming. Sims 3 on Mars.
Man. Sim
Red
Mars,
Planet
that would
Party
be awesome.
Pack.
Yeah, because there's Red Faction Gorilla. Blow shit up on Mars. Right? Yeah. But the other side of that is, man, wouldn't it be really interesting if humans figured out how to terraform a planet and you could do that?
Yep.
It would be awesome.
Video games.
Pretty good.
All right. So Jeff Moeller writes, "Hey, Idle Thumbs, want to hear more dreams? This one isn't about playing game, but is instead about an Idle Thumbs meetup. I don't know where it took place, but it seemed to be in someone's apartment. We were all sitting on the floor in a circle eating pepperoni pizza. Nick and Jake were not present for some reason, and Chris was being an asshole."
Red.
Well, I guess that happened. Eventually, everyone convinced Chris into saying the wizard.
Wait, who is everyone? If
the people at the Idle Thumbs meetup.
Readers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Eventually everyone convinced Chris into saying the wizard, and it came from his mouth exactly as you'd hear it in the wizard.mp3 with backing harmonies and all. That's all I can remember. Hope you enjoy.
The wizard.
There might be another reader mail.
Oh, what's that reader mail?
Jake, did you find a reader mail?
Read that reader mail.
Oh, I just showed up. You should read it.
All right. Idle Thumbs writes, begin forwarded message from Idle Thumbs.
What a weird way to begin your reader mail.
Nicholas, I hear you player Abbey Road.
I player Abbey Road. Yeah.
Did you player it?
I did player it. I also played it.
In the Beatles Rock Band?
In the Beatles Rock Band.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fuck. Yeah.
It's really good.
Oh.
Man, the number of times you've played this, it's really good.
What else are you going to say about Abbey Road? No, it's awesome. You played all the way through. It's like it's just all the songs are, you know, as they're listed
how's
as
that,
singles.
How's that and combined?
It's actually kind of weird because I play it as guitar just to test it out. And, you know, there are obviously sections that...
combined what? What?
Oh, sorry, Jake.
The second
I
half
overrun
of the
you.
Album has the combined lots of stuff.
Medley, the big one.
Yes. The big medley yeah. stuff. Is that just one ultra track?
It's, well, you, like you a can, couple? You have the option. You can play it as the Abbey Road medley or, and then all the other individual
that's awesome.
Songs you're listening.
Good.
Yeah, so I played the medley, but it was weird because there were sections that you were actually playing like strings or
oh,
piano.
Weird.
Also, in the Queen Pack and Rock Band 2,
I'm excited about that too. This is like the best.
Yeah,
rock
yeah, yeah.
Band
it was,
ever.
It's great. It's a great day for Rock Band. But you play the piano like very deliberately, like for a really long time. It's really weird. But it works. It's
yeah.
Fun.
I've definitely noticed Killer sometimes
Queen.
They do that.
Yeah.
Like with keyboards. It's
yeah.
Like, I know this was a synthesizer.
Yeah, when it's synth and stuff, but
don't
this
have
is
to
just
pretend
piano.
It's a guitar.
I mean, this is just you know.
Yeah.
It's
I guess
not
they just don't care.
No, I think they're starting to care about that stuff less. At least that's the way it seems. But,
I guess they have to if they keep expanding their library.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to have to do that. But
well, that's cool.
I also bought Rock Band iPhone.
Yeah, that's actually weird.
There's a Rock Band iPhone?
Yeah, it just came out.
You heard about when that? It was in Guitar Hero 1, that was not the case. So the piano just existed on its own, and you only play the guitar stuff. There was a lot of silence in parts of that song because of that.
In Rock Band 1?
Or in Guitar Hero 1. Sorry, but by Harmonix, they adapted it a very different way, apparently, even though, you know.
Well, I think what they I think what they did was add guitar to that song in their cover. Because there was no silence.
Yeah.
There was no silence.
I definitely, because
I was thinking about that today. I was like, man, this is different.
The original was definitely as made famous
there
by
is,
Queen.
Yeah, there is some silence now, but then there are also parts where you're playing
Yeah, it's fucked
piano.
Up because like I remember that from some songs that I knew in like Guitar Hero 2 or something.
Right.
I was like playing.
Yeah, right.
I was playing like, I think it was Heart-Shaped Box, and I was like, they added a guitar solo to this.
Yeah, yeah,
what the fuck are they doing? It was just weird.
Yeah. Yep.
Because you got to be a guitar hero.
Oh, right.
You were saying something a second ago that
I'd rather be a DJ hero.
I bought Rock Band
a band
iPhone.
Hero.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it good?
It's actually
it
good.
Good. Oh, okay.
A
is
Rock Band iPhone.
Play Tap Revenge, the third party?
Yeah, I play that.
Is,
yeah.
is it a similar thing to that? Or
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's similar. I mean, it's you tap everything. In fact, they offer the option of singing, but it's just tapping, which is kind of dumb. But the game is good.
When singing
although,
is
yeah. At this point, it's sort of that may have been the tipping point for me realizing that I've spent way too much money.
The tapping point. No.
Oh!
Right, punch
on.
Face.
Yeah.
Moving on to what?
Oh, I don't know. Good question.
I spent $1,200 on those games, guys.
What?
What? You have?
Yeah, I totaled it up.
On Rock Band and Guitar Hero branded games?
Yes.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Mm. Well, they made a lot of money. Beatles Rock Band outsold Guitar Hero 5 in September.
Yeah,
nice.
Yep.
Although
good work, Harmonix.
Undersold in terms of his expectations, right? I mean, they were expecting to sell a million copies that month.
Oh yeah, well,
so
it was not as good a month for anyone as people are expecting. So it's not too bad for them, I guess.
By the time Christmas comes and goes, Beatles Rock Band will have done a fucking number on everyone.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That is probably going to be a big Christmas gift.
I would guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I talked to the general manager of MTV Games the other day, and he said they have a very they've very much planned for a sort of two-tier marketing thing where they have their launch budget and then they have a whole separate marketing push plan.
I hadn't even thought of that, but holy shit. Like, yeah, a $150 or whatever thing that you can buy for your... Is that much?
The whole set with
if
all the Beatles-branded instruments? Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. But they also have other stuff that's not that expensive, right? But anyway, it's a big ticket. Yeah. You can play Beatles music item that you could totally get for your boomer parents. Like, I bet a shit ton of people will buy that. That's crazy.
And a shit ton of boomer parents are going to buy it for themselves if my mom is any indicator. She, I think, can't wait for me to take the loaned copy back so that she can acquire the one with the actual instruments.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah? Nice. Yeah. That's awesome.
Are we done now?
Oh, we have one more email. It's from Chris Remo. It says, Dear Nick, why are you going and leaving us to never do Out of Thumbs again?
Wow.
Oh, my God. That was an extreme way to drop that news.
I don't know. I didn't know I was leaving.
Oh, really?
What?
Oh,
this is news to me.
In 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
You're leaving.
Wow. Why am I leaving?
Because you broke an embargo.
Oh, okay.
No. Actually, it's really awesome. Nick has been hired as a community manager for Bethesda Softworks.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That is rad.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
As a side effect from that, Idle Thumbs 50 will probably be the last episode of Idle Thumbs for a while.
Probably for a long while.
So, I mean, there was a window there of 3 seconds where people were like, congratulations, Nick. Fuck Nick.
Yeah, I mean, by for a while, I mean maybe ever.
Yeah.
We decided that it's maybe the best move to just stop instead of mutate a thing. Who knows if we'll do other things with Idle Thumbs' name at some point. We probably will, because Idle Thumbs can't stay dead. But
yeah. It's been coming in and out of existence for 5 years now, so it might still
be
that.
We may join up at GDC or not.
But, I mean, you guys had a pretty goddamn good run as the three of you guys making sweet casts. I mean, 50 is a good number.
And there's two more left.
Holy shit.
Oh, man.
Oh, shit.
And they're going to be the best two Idle Thumbs ever.
Oh, man.
Because I'm not going to be on
that. That all musical episode that's next week.
Oh, yeah.
And then that one we're going to just talk about upcoming highly anticipated games that no one else has played. On every console.
Wow.
Far Cry 3.
Far Cry 3 exclusive. We're going to get Barack Obama on episode 50.
And then we're going to tell him, I'm going to keep my dedicated servers.
Yep.
You keep the change.
Yeah.
We should mention, though, that Max Schaefer is going to be on next week. That's cool, right?
Oh, yeah.
Who is it?
Max Schaefer, who is the, I forget his, what is he, the CEO, president, something or other?
Co-founder.
Kings.
Co-founder guy, I don't know what his,
of Runic Games, which is making Torchlight, which I'm pretty excited about.
Yeah,
and
I
Nick
am too.
And Nick and I should have played it. I think we'll have played it.
Yes.
Yeah, by next episode.
You are playing it.
Yeah, maybe we're playing it right now.
Yeah.
As you speak.
So I guess if you want to ask any questions about Torchlight, questions at idlethumbs.net and
/Torchlight.
And don't do that.
Incorrect.
And we'll ask them of Mr. Schaefer when he's on the
If you want to leave
show.
Him horrible voicemails, call us on your
we
telephone
totally forgot about
at 55 Wizard On and make sound effects about Torchlight, and we'll shame ourselves by playing them next week. What have we got to lose? There's like two episodes left.
Yeah.
This thing's going to tailspin into a fucking fiasco.
Sucks. Is the best.
Oh, man. Cubes for babies.
I can't say anything offensive.
Oh, it feels so good to cut loose.
I love games.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So what about that?
What do you think about
find out on
hey,
episode
Chris,
51.
What do you think about
Nick thinks episode 50.
It's all coming out.
Yeah. I like games a lot.
Yep.
Yeah. Just like the same way Nick loves a lot.
You're gonna get me fired.
What is this? You're just when Steve said that you didn't have to laugh. You didn't have to Borderlands all over that.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Hey guys, 1, 2, 3.
I didn't know what you were doing.
I didn't know what you were doing.
Physically in the side.
I thought you wanted us to say the wizard.
Yeah, I thought that's
all. Oh, shit, okay. Well, in that case, 1, 2, 3.
The wizard!
Oh, fuck this. Throw tables, microphones.
So, see you guys next week.
Yeah. I quit.
Video game.
If Bethesda Softworks and the Software Toolworks, if you remember that company, if they merged and made Bethesda Soft Tools,
I think it was Soft
these tools
Toolworks.
Are terrible.
Soft Toolworks, this is crap. Well, yeah, they will also work.
I can't
your
use
soft
these
tool.
For anything.
Yeah, Bethesda.
Not again.
Oh,
your tools are so soft.
Ugh.
Video game.
Huh? You said you were going to talk about Boost.
Well, all right, I'm talking about Boost. If you want me to talk about Boost, I'll talk about Boost.
All right.
Oh, we do. That's exactly what we want.
I don't have anything to say about Boost.
Oh, man.
What?
Ultra boost.
I don't know.
What do you think about Borderlands?
Just replace what he just said about boost with Borderlands instead.
He doesn't really have anything to say about it.
He doesn't want to talk about
it. The word Borderlands is mentioned on this podcast.
It's actually I will the go magic like word. That. Oh, snap.
These two do this every fucking week. Every
children.
Week.
Whoa, that's a wrong sentence.
Screedly boo.
We're fucking children. That's how you know.
That may
I'm
make
kidding.
It worse, actually. That doesn't invalidate it at all. We're fucking those children.
This is Idle Thumbs 48. Baby rape.
I'm Nick Bracken. I'm Nick Bracken. Nick Bracken. I'm Nick Bracken.